Hello and welcome to Beheaded.
Welcome to Season 3, Episode 13, Part 1.
I'm Megan Moore.
And I'm Elizabeth Black.
It's lucky number 13.
Lucky number 13. And it's going to be Friday the 13th soon. Ooh.
We're here.
I know.
Season finale.
It is a season finale. It's two parts. So don't be a psycho and only listen to one part because that's odd. I don't know why people do that.
That's what everyone does. Yeah. We have more listens on part two than part one because all you y'all freaks just want to listen to the beheading.
Yeah, you weirdos. What kind of dark creatures are you?
Our followers.
But it is funny. It's like a staggering difference. It's not like, okay, like only a few people listen to two and not one.
Like probably like
30%.
Yeah, I was going to say 30 to 40% probably more listens on part two.
You weirdos.
Should
I was going to say this is part one, so they're not even hearing us talk about them. So we've got to save this part for the second half.
We will.
Okay.
But we can say whatever we want about them right now.
That's true. Maybe this is like safe space. They will never know.
Sick people.
If you know those people, please call them out. Please write to us and tell us who they are, where they live.
Oh, we know where they live. We have all of that tracking.
It's true.
We do. I have very good metrics on Buzzsprout.
And we want to know what their least desirable way to be executed would be. That's important.
Oh.
Yeah.
Should do a survey.
Yeah.
Survey monkey this afterwards.
Perfect. We'll find you.
Oh, Elizabeth. I'm kind of sad. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Bittersweet. Because we always go on a hiatus. We do a break.
Yes.
Because this is like our lives, October through...
Through April, May. I know. Mm-hmm. It's like such a big part of our time, right? It's like we do it every couple of weeks and we spend a lot of time researching and... Yeah, I mean, it is, like, time-consuming, right?
It's a hobby, for sure. Yeah. And for some of you who may have wondered, like, do we do any type of profit for this? We literally don't. Like, I get fed ads and salespeople all the time. Like, you can monetize your podcast. And
right.
But this is very much a hobby for the both of us. And we just like doing it. I'm not here for money. I want to pretend to be a historian when I have no master's degree.
Yeah.
This is what I'm doing.
It's like maybe like we'll do it just so someone can give us an honorary degree from somewhere.
Ooh, like Taylor.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift got an honorary degree.
From where?
Oh my gosh. NYU.
Oh, that's a big one. That's good.
It's not terrible. I mean, it's not Harvard, but...
Hey, NYU's cool.
We'll get our honorary degrees in Cambridge University.
What's her name from Gossip Girl?
Blake Lively?
No,
Leah...
The other one.
Michelle...
No, that's from the...
I don't know. I don't watch these
what's
shows.
What's that called? Now I can't think of anything.
Glee.
Glee, thank you. No, Blair Waldorf.
Oh.
My girl from Blair... Or from Blair Waldorf. Should be called Blair Waldorf.
From the Blair Witch Project.
I actually saw a survey the other day on Instagram that was like, who do you think the main character was of Gossip Girl? And I was like... I just love Blair, so I clicked Blair, and most people said Blair.
I've never seen it.
It's kind of dumb, but it's like one of those shows where like once you start, you might as well finish kind of thing. Mm. It's okay. Not bad.
Going back to our hobby, though. So, yeah, kind of like our cadence with this is we have a lineup that changes probably 20 times throughout the season. So we think we know who we're going to talk about, and then we get excited about something. We're like, no, let's do this person instead.
Or we get suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or, yeah, we'll listen to some people throw things out, too, which I always appreciate. Please communicate to us.
Yeah, we usually, like, put those towards the top of the list once you do. So
yes. Mostly Instagram. I clearly don't look at my email, Facebook, Twitter. So... and then we'll kind of research that person. We do that for about a week.
Yeah.
And then we do recording night, which is a whole thing for us because we normally meet on Tuesdays and Elizabeth comes over like 6-ish.
Yeah, sounds about right.
And we have snacks, mostly cheese, some wine.
Lots of wine.
We just get caught up for like an hour.
Yeah.
So, and then we get ready. We watch some documentaries together. We get our notes together. We don't have a script, as you can probably figure that out, but we do have notes.
Right, exactly. And I will say, like, our notes have gotten more robust over time because now we know the general structure of, like, you know, what we're going to say. Like, looking back at some of our early episodes, my notes are just, like...
And then they died.
Yeah. Like, trial, execution. I'm like, great.
So. I do have to laugh if you listen to the last episode. Oh. It is such a true thing. I know it was in the middle of, like, a fit of giggle, so it was probably hard to get out. But it's true. So we always start off with early life. And Elizabeth and I are normally like, okay, who wants to do early life? Because the meat of the story, if I'm like, I don't know. It's about chemistry or it's about broom fucking Hilda. I don't know.
Socrates theories.
But don't let that be an indicator of this evening.
No.
Because it's very deliberate, our layout today.
Our approach.
And yeah, and it's not even like, so we have fun recording and half of this time we have to like, sometimes through this whole banter part, I have to take stuff out because we just end up in conversation.
Then
like,
we just go.
I'm like, oh, we're recording. Let's get back on track.
And we have to remember sometimes we're like, we like gossip and we're like, wait, maybe we should not have all of that in here.
I edit. But that's also a fun part for me is I'll go back and I do all the editing myself.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'm not going to say I'm an expert by any means.
You do a great job.
But I think it's gotten a little better.
Yeah.
We used to have some sound quality issues. We've gotten better at it, I think.
Yes.
The part I do, like, if there's anybody out there who has, like, a passion for social media, I'm so bad at
posting. It's so hard to maintain social media because, and I think you and I are kind of the same. You're better at social media than I am, for sure, but both of us are the same. Like when we get excited, we're like, okay, I'm going to post this, 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 and this. And you can't wait to like write it, write the caption, like it, and then days go by and then it's expired.
It becomes a chore.
It becomes a chore. You're like, this is not even relevant anymore.
I'm not good with captions. I write probably too much. I'm not hashtagging. I don't really understand. I do it. I don't understand it.
I literally just have a note of all the hashtags I use so I can just insert them without having to think about them every time. So instead of like English history, it'll say French history or Italian history. And I just like, that's all because I can't just mentally like think about it every time.
Well, it's so funny to me too when I look at the trends of our Instagram. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, I'm trying to kind of record Anne Boleyn's timeline of her downfall.
You're doing because a good
job. We're in the middle of it.
Yes.
It all kind of starts on April 30th and it goes literally downhill from there.
Right.
So I'm trying to document day by day of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because when I post pictures of actual still frames from the Tudors,
right,
I'll get a pretty like higher than normal. And then I'll post, or for example, like I made like my own little edit, like, okay, I'm going to grab these pictures and make my own. Yeah. And then there's like nothing.
So three likes.
I don't get the trends, but I don't really do it for the likes anyways.
No.
I do it because for us, it's fun to document.
Yeah.
And overall, I guess what I'm getting at is thank you for listening. This is very much just a hobby of us.
Yeah.
And this is what we like to do. And
thank you for supporting us.
Yeah.
And we've gotten to know a lot of our listeners like personally. Like some of us follow each other on Instagram or like DM through Instagram.
Yeah.
So that's been kind of fun. Again, meeting people from all over the world. So, I mean, we do it for fun. We are already talking about season 4 and some things we're thinking of for that.
So crazy. We could do some shout outs. How about that?
Oh, we're shouting out. Oh.
Shout out Nikita Rose.
Oh, dude, she's bomb.
I love you.
Yeah.
I love liking, liking as a verb.
I follow her on Instagram. She's got a really fun life.
Yeah.
And I love her freaking dog.
Thank you for, like, reposting our things and just being a supporter.
Yeah, she's awesome.
I know we've had some new followers, too. Eric D. You look like a fun guy.
Daddy Pig likes to dig. He's new.
Daddy Pig.
He actually, like, posts some really cool historical content.
I'm looking through my Instagram messages. I have Tom Felton in here. I think I may have gotten drunk one night and texted
and messaged
Tom Felton.
Did he message you back?
No.
Was
he
like, wait,
is
this Megan Moore from Beheaded?
He did it. Actually, I didn't tell you this, Elizabeth.
Oh.
I remember why I did that. I was posting because Tom Felton is going to be in a new movie about the gunpowder plot.
That's
He's
right.
He's playing Guy Fawkes.
Yes.
So I have to apologize for like a very stupid moment I had.
When?
So I did like a little survey of like, who do you like as Guy Fawkes, Tom Felton, or Kit Harington?
Oh, but they're both in it.
Well, no, they're two different things. Jake and I, my husband, just started watching The Gunpowder Plot on HBO, which also, it's like a miniseries.
Okay.
Oh my God, the best drawn and quartering scene in the first, at the very beginning. Like very.
Love it.
Very graphic.
Yeah.
Very brutal.
Yeah.
I don't want to like spoil anything because I think it's like supposed to be a surprise.
Oh.
Kit Harington is not Guy Fawkes. I thought that's who he played.
Who does he play?
Another guy. Like another person.
Okay, so this is not two separate shows.
No, they are.
Okay.
There's a movie coming out.
Okay.
With Tom Felton playing Guy Fawkes.
Yes.
There's an HBO miniseries that Kit Harington's the main like protagonist in it. He's like the main guy on the trailers, the main guy on the posters.
But he's not.
But
Guy
I hadn't
Fawkes.
Seen it. I just had known like, oh, yeah. He doesn't play Guy Fawkes.
Did anyone correct you? Did people fill out the poll? And they're like, great.
Everyone voted for Kit Harington besides like two people thought Tom Felton, who has not aged well.
Ooh, burn.
He might be my new fan after I message him. That was going to scratch all of that.
Cut that part. We love you, Tom Felton.
I'm a Slytherin, so I guess, but so far, we're only on the first episode. It's only like three episodes. Ooh. Oh, it's some good execution scenes.
How long is the whole series?
It's like, they're each like an hour. It's like 3 hours. It's
but not, like how many episodes?
I think there's only three.
Oh, so you're done. You said
no, I'm on the first.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Anyways. Cool.
That's exciting. I haven't picked up a new show in a while. I've just been too busy. And like off season is going to be awesome because I'm done marathoning for this year. Going to be done podcasting.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. I have so much free time.
Just eat.
I'm just going to like snack. It's going to be too hot in Arizona to like run outside.
Just graze.
So yeah, I'm going to like just kind of snack and, you know, make some cocktails and enjoy the pool and yeah, pick up some new shows. I don't know what, but we'll see. It's going to be a nice little chill time.
Good things coming out.
I need to chill.
Well, you haven't been chilling. You went to Disneyland last weekend.
Yeah, I've had like a crazy travel schedule recently. Like, obviously, I've told you guys about all the marathon trips, but this last week I had to go to Disneyland. Mm. No, I went and met a bunch of coworkers at Disneyland, and I haven't been to Disneyland. Like, we've been to Disney World a few times, but Disneyland since like 2017. It's been really long for
me. An avid Disney goer. Yeah. Elizabeth's a huge Disney fan. You collect all the ears and...
Yeah, I have so many ears and crowns and pins and like merch. And I mean, I used to have a pass in college. I'd go all the time. So it's so weird for me to be like an outsider at Disneyland because it's like everyone understands like the new rides and the new lightning lane system and the mobile ordering. And I'm like, where's the Dole Whip line? Like, I just don't understand anything.
Of the past.
I know. And I'm actually taking my mom for Mother's Day coming up. So, like, so that'll be fun because now that I've done it once, I feel like I'm an expert again. And I could be like, oh, mom, you have to mobile order the Dole Whip. Like, I'll know things. But I felt very much on the outside this trip. But it was great because the girls I went with from work, like, two of them used to work at Disneyland. All of them are just very big fans. So we had a great time. Like, saw the new Galaxy's Edge, saw the new Avengers campus. Like, there's so much to see. So good stuff. And, like, they really reimagined a lot of the food menus. So good. We had a lot of good time snacking.
You can hug the characters again.
You can hug the characters.
Because it was... like very distanced.
It was kind of sad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even the way, I mean, you and I saw this at Disney World, like the way the characters came down for parades, It was like they were in like one vehicle per character, like very isolated, didn't feel like a big deal, like a big production. So that was nice to see. But yeah, so I did that. I had to go to San Francisco for work for something. So I've just been like all around. I'm so sick of flying. Like I feel like I've just been like constantly getting like sick and like tired and my legs hurt and like this. So again, I can't wait to just like chill by the pool and have like a hot Arizona lazy summer. That's all
well,
I want.
Well, you start getting lazy. I'm going to pick it up.
You're going to pick it up.
Jake and I are leaving for England next week.
That's wild.
So when I actually post...
You'll be in
Part
England.
Part two, I'll be in England.
Yeah.
I'm really going to try my best to document my emotions as I go through this.
Yes, please try.
I know I'm going to be emotional. I know the minute I see the Tower of London and Hampton Court Palace and Hever Palace and Thornberry Castle and stay in the room that Anne Boleyn stayed in. I think Jake and I were talking about the things we're most excited to see. And I would say my top three right now. I really want to see the graffiti in the Tower of London where the prisoners carved out, like, the like, Anne Boleyn's falcon.
Yeah.
I want to see the eavesdroppers.
Yes.
And the last H&A emblem in Hampton Court Palace.
Right.
Because it stood for Henry and Anne. Right. And they had to get rid of it all so quickly after she was executed and he was marrying Jane Seymour that they missed one of the little carvings up in the ceiling of the Hampton Court Palace in the banquet hall.
It's cool he never corrected it either. Like, they noticed it and they're like, well, whatever.
Which is great because he married another Anne, so just leave it.
Yeah.
Actually, I've been reading... kind of like getting myself in the mood for all of this.
Yeah.
I've been reading, again, Eric Ives's version of The Life and Death of Anne Boleyn.
Right.
And I learned something that during her coronation, we talked about how the people weren't very excited and they were silent and they didn't take their hats off when she was being you know, her procession down the streets.
Yeah.
I didn't know that people were making jokes that the H-A stood for, like, ha-ha, because she was such a joke.
Right.
Because she was coming after Catherine. So H-A, Henry Ann, they were like, oh, it stands for ha-ha, because she's a joke.
Oh, I did not catch that, but I saw that during when, like, the Tudors episode, during her coronation, because they have the banners that say H-A, H-A,
yeah, H-A. It looks like ha-ha-ha.
So I think I noticed that just on my own, being like, oh, how funny, like, ha-ha.
It looks like laughter.
But I didn't realize that was a thing.
Yeah,
I guess that makes sense.
Which is just funny.
But didn't they say har-har back then?
Har-har-har.
Har-har.
And then there was a third thing. I really, 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 really can't wait to see Anne Boleyn's portrait in Hever Palace. Oh. Like, the infamous – and it's not that big. It's – I mean, I'm pointing to you, but no one can see that. Like, it's about the size of that. It's like –
it's good radio.
It's like 30
Oh, that's really small.
Inches. I don't know.
It's kind of like when you see the Mona Lisa in real life and you expect it to be this grand portrait. And you're like, oh, that's freaking tiny.
Yeah. Which they actually painted that portrait, too, about – 60 years after she died.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good to know.
Anyways, those are the things I'm most excited for. And
what is Jake most excited for?
He told me it was something like food. And
what a boy.
Yeah, just not working. Yeah. PTO.
He's like, you know, PTO.
He wants to see the double deckers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pubs. Actually, no, I think he said, like, going to the English pubs and
that's cool.
Drinking and that kind of thing.
But no fish and chips for you.
No.
Okay.
Anyways, we're going to try our best to, like, document. Jake is very prepared and up for the challenge of kind of not having me just, like, in the... You know, just taking pictures of everything, but getting both of us in pictures and me in pictures. And
he's going to be your, like, production assistant.
Yeah, I'll try.
Good.
So I'm excited. But
I know. Well, take your time, because obviously this is your trip for your soul. So, like, I want to see all the pictures. I want to be super involved. But I also know that, like, these things are very personal. So, like,
About personal. It's more or less about my laziness of getting them published. And
yeah, it's hard when you go on vacation because it's like your camera rolls just overflowing.
Blasted, yeah.
It's like literally 15 pictures of the same freaking, like, corner, you know? So then you have to go through it all and you're like, oh my gosh, like, I have 1500 pictures, like,
things
what
that
do
you
I
thought
do?
Were important.
Yeah. So that's always, like, it's fun to relive, but it's always a pain because you're like, I don't even know, I'm too overwhelmed by all these pictures to even, like, edit them out.
Yeah.
But it's all good stuff. I'm very excited for you.
I'm excited.
It's gonna be fun.
So tonight, we haven't revealed who our big season finale is, which is always someone important and big and worthy of two parts.
Yes.
Not a Brunhilde. That bitch.
This is a good one.
This is actually a good one.
Yeah, and it's one we wanted to do for a while. Go ahead and introduce her.
Should I? Well, she is technically a queen in the Tudor era, but she had a very, very short reign.
Yes.
She's known as the 9-Day Queen.
Yep.
Lady Jane Grey. Oh, I just got chills.
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 We're both wearing gray in a certain way.
Mine's kind of a navy, but sure.
It's okay. But it looks relevant to the era.
Oh, this one, I don't know. I just, after reading and watching and digesting, I'm not going to say I like her more than Anne Boleyn, because Anne Boleyn will for always be my...
Number one.
My heroic heroine of history. That's redundant. My historic heroine.
Of history.
Of history.
Not redundant, though.
But Jane is up there.
Yeah.
Jane's a good one.
She's a really good one. I think the first time I really, like, because I've known who she was for a long time, right? But, like, I think when you gave me the book, The Last Tudor, which is obviously fictional, like, Philippa Gregory book, but it was, like, the first time I realized, again, the whole there's no men in this era. Like, who's going to be the next heir? Her and her two sisters. And, like, where do they fall throughout all of this? So that was the first time I really contextualized her life. And then, again, researching it for this book. We're not writing a book right now.
I mean, we could.
This episode, it was like, oh, like, yeah, she's got such a good story. And way more powerful of a woman than you would think. Like, a lot of people thought she was just kind of, when you hear something like the 9-Day Queen, assume maybe she was just, oh, like a quick blip in history, like puppet type of figure. Mm-hmm. But really, like, super powerful in her own way.
She was young. So it's like, young. You kind of feel like, eh, she's just a Passover. But
yeah.
So let's get into it.
Yeah.
Wait, how are we starting with this? Am I doing early life? I had a preface.
Are,
okay, don't be deceived.
Should I start with the family tree before as, like, a setup for
yeah,
all that?
Why don't you? Whoa, we're going rogue. Yeah, do it.
Do it.
Do it. Do the family tree.
Okay. Because, like, the family tree for me was super helpful just to contextualize. And obviously, family trees are visual. I'm going to be speaking to you. But just to make it a little more clear of, like, where she stands amongst the other tutors.
So, if it helps at all, Elizabeth is using a lot of hand gestures.
I was going
right
to say,
now.
I'm moving my hands real big actually, so you can like, probably see them.
Protect the wine. So I'll try to. And now her hand is over to the left, showing the left side of the tree.
Left side of the tree. No, I will try not to like hit anything, or you might hear some swooshing sounds.
You turn Italian when you talk about family trees.
It's
very
visual. I know.
Okay, go for it.
It helps me mentally keep it on track. Anyway, so you have at the top of this family tree, Henry, King Henry the VII, right? Not the VIII. Because King Henry the VII has three children. And we're just going to talk about survivors because, yes, in this era, a lot of people died. So we're only talking about surviving children.
Okay.
So you have King Henry the VIII, you have Margaret Tudor, and you have Mary Tudor, who are the three children. Obviously, we've kind of known from other episodes, and probably you all know a little bit of background by now on Henry. But Henry the VIII has Edward the VI, his only boy. And he has Mary the First and Elizabeth the First, right? So two girls, one boy for King Henry the VIII. And then his sister, Margaret Tudor, her son is James the Fifth, whose daughter is Mary, Queen of Scots, which mm-hmm. we've also done an episode on. So you should be very familiar with her if you're a good executionado.
Educate yourselves.
Educate yourself. See season one. So the last sister is Mary Tudor, who marries Charles Brandon that we've referenced before on this podcast. Mary and Charles Brandon have a daughter named Frances who marries someone named Henry Grey. And they have three daughters. A lot of daughters going on in this era. And their three daughters are Jane Grey, Catherine Grey, and Mary Grey. So
lots of Marys,
a lot of Mary. And I know we've talked about this before, but obviously this era is full
Marys
of
Marys and Catherines.
Marys
and
Catherines and Annes and Margarets. Like, they're all over the place. But hopefully that gives you a little bit of an idea of, like, okay, like, one of these, like, lines on the family tree, one of these branches is King Henry VIII and his daughter slash one son. One is the Mary Queen of Scots type of, like, branch, and the other is the Grey family, who we've not talked really much about on this podcast.
And the biggest thing to call out is there are eight surviving women.
Yeah.
James the Fifth dies.
James the Fifth dies.
So eight surviving women and mm-hmm. Edward.
And Edward.
Edward
is the only boy in this era.
So let's talk about Lady Jane Grey. Mm-hmm. She was born autumn of 1537. And as Elizabeth just said, she's the eldest daughter of Lady Frances and Henry Grey, who's the third Marquis of Dorset.
Yep.
Also, like, to kind of describe the family tree a little bit better to put into other terms. So we can also say she is not only the daughter of Mary Tudor, but the great-granddaughter of Henry the VII. Henry the VIII is her great-uncle.
Okay, yeah.
And that's all I got. I was looking at my notes.
I like it.
I was looking at my notes for half a second because I was trying to write it in different ways to kind of figure out her relationship to the Tudors.
Yes.
She's the first cousin twice removed from Elizabeth the First, Mary mm-hmm. the First. Mm-hmm. So she has royal blood in her, even though at the time people didn't really know. She was kind of a nobody.
Right. Like, she lived out in the country somewhere, you know, not really like in the courtly life from mm-hmm. day to day.
They were very wealthy. Her family, they were part of the court, and she was very educated. Mm-hmm. She learned multiple languages, Latin, Greek. She had, committed tutors. Not tutors, tutors.
Yeah.
She was known for reading a lot. She wasn't one to like sports or going outside or really riding a horse or falconry or anything like that. She mm-hmm. loved to read. She loved reading Plato and philosophy. She's a very smart girl.
Yeah.
She also learned how to write. She had beautiful handwriting. She knew how to write letters, which was kind of something that they taught the boys.
Right.
But she was smart. She knew how to carry herself. Mm-hmm. She knew how to be a lady in court, and that's what she was being trained and raised to be.
Yeah. Especially because you have to remember that because there are no boys, like, they're not, you know, her and her sisters aren't just these girls that are being overshadowed by men in their family. Like, they're it. So even though they're women, like, they want to be educated. Like, you know, they want to make sure that they're very fiercely Protestant. Like, they're being raised in a way you would almost raise a boy because there are no boys. So you only mm-hmm. have to put your energy into these women instead of, like, worrying about yep. the guys in your family.
And we talked about this in the Anne Askew episode, but as a reminder, Henry VIII dies in 1547.
Right.
So for the first 10 years of Jane's life, England is Catholic.
Yes.
But her father and her tutors were very committed Protestants, mm-hmm. which is funny because Queen Catherine Parr was also leaning Protestant, which was against Henry's beliefs. It's all very confusing because Henry goes back and forth from Protestant to Catholic. But all you have to know is the first 10 years up until the end of Henry's life, England is Catholic. So she's getting all these Protestant influence and she's learning how to be raised Protestant.
Exactly.
February 1547, a month after Henry VIII dies, mm-hmm. she's only 10 years old. She goes to live with Thomas Seymour and, funny enough, Catherine Parr.
Right.
I'm going to kind of breeze through this part, but if you want to know more about Thomas Seymour, I did an episode interviewing Rebecca Larson specifically about Thomas Seymour. Mm-hmm. Rebecca Larson, she hosts the Tudor Dynasty podcast, and she is very, very thorough on Thomas Seymour. She's almost done writing a book about him. Yeah. So she is definitely someone to talk to. But so I'm going to kind of breeze through this. And if you're interested, go back and listen to that special episode last summer. But Catherine Parr was the final queen of King Henry VIII. We call her the survivor. Mm-hmm. She very quickly after Henry dies, she goes and marries Thomas Seymour. Thomas Seymour is the uncle of Edward VI.
Right.
Are we getting confused yet? Am I naming too many Edwards, Henrys, Thomases?
Edward VI is the surviving male of King Henry VIII.
Yep. Henry VIII's son, Edward. Mm-hmm. His uncle, who's Jane Seymour's brother, is Thomas Seymour.
Right.
Jane Grey is sent off to go live with Thomas and Catherine. And this was a very common thing to do. It was called foster families.
Right.
And it was something that aristocrats did. It was something of high nobility. So if you feel like, oh gosh, they're just passing her off as like some orphan, or is she that needy, or do they need to go send her off to work? That wasn't the purpose.
No.
She was an attendant to Catherine Parr. And she was, it was kind of a matchmaking like situation because they're in early stages getting their daughters or their sons out there into other families and mm-hmm. meeting other families and creating bonds. And of course, the Seymours and the Parrs, these are high nobilities, the ex-wife of King Henry VIII.
Right.
So she's there to be her attendant, and she's also learning from her. Again, Catherine Parr is very Protestant, so she's getting more Protestant influence from Catherine. Mm-hmm. She's learning. Catherine Parr was also very into arts and music and education and reading, and all of this is being fed into Jane Grey. Jane Grey was with her not for a very long time. I mean, it's so sad. Elizabeth and I were saying this, how we call Catherine Parr the survivor. She didn't live that long. So Henry dies January 1547, she marries Thomas Seymour. She gets pregnant. She dies 6 days after giving birth in 1548.
That's literally the next year after
a year
King
later.
Henry dies.
Jane is the chief mourner at her funeral, so obviously she was a beloved person in her life, mm-hmm. and she actually ends up moving back with Thomas Seymour. At this point, she's only 11 years old. She saw him kind of as a father figure. I will save my remarks because there are other comments about Thomas Seymour and his creepiness with Elizabeth I, but whatever.
Right.
We'll save that for another time.
Besides the point.
Up until the point in 1548, Thomas Seymour is arrested because he is trying to take over ruling Edward VI as being his protector, which really was his older brother's deal. It's a whole nother thing. All you have to know is Thomas Seymour gets beheaded.
Dun, dun, dun.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's a lot going on. Did I overspeak in my parts?
No, that is perfect.
Okay, go on with your... We're very organized this time.
I was going to say, we have everything like pretty much in a nice little tidy bundle here.
We do.
So while this is going on, Edward VI, right, is currently the king. He's young. He's the boy king. And he's getting increasingly concerned about his succession, right? Because there's no other men in the family. There's only women who are mostly very young or, in his opinion, incapable of running the country. The kind of the oldest girl that is up for the job is Mary Tudor, mm-hmm. who is very Catholic. Mm-hmm. And obviously we know Edward VI is very Protestant and is not about to like just let that happen. So he is very much like his father in that he believes in only male heirs. He keeps saying it over and over. He puts it in everything in terms of writings that only male heirs are acceptable in this time. So one thing that they do in this era is they say, okay, all of these single females, all these young girls need to get married, like right now. Mm-hmm. They need to start producing heirs. Maybe one of them is going to produce a boy. So that way, you know, if something happens to King Edward VI, we have another boy ready to go. We have another king ready who's just going to be another boy king, but at least there's extras. There's other people to choose from. And we have to remember that Edward VI isn't in great health in general. Mm-hmm. He's just struggling. So here we are. We have the Grey girls. We have Jane, Catherine, and Mary. So Jane's parents kind of approach her and they say, hey, you know, we know you're only 15, but you need to be married like yesterday. And we have the perfect man for you. We have Lord Guildford Dudley, and he's actually the son of John Dudley the First, who's the Duke of Northumberland. Mm-hmm. So Northumberland is just how we're going to reference him because that's easier to say than that full title. But Northumberland at this point is the person who's essentially the most powerful man in the country. He is Lord President of the King's Council, and he's the one who's really overseeing Edward's rule. Mm-hmm. He's the one who's looking after his health. He's the one saying, hey, like, let's take a look at your succession. Like, let's take a look to see what's going to happen if, for whatever reason, something happens to you. So he's really kind of the one pulling all the strings at this moment. So, of course, that's the person that the parents go to Jane and say, hey, you got to marry his son.
Isn't it just so convenient?
So convenient.
That Northumberland is like, well, how do we, you know, get with the Grey family? It's all about the matchmaking.
Exactly.
And a few other facts about Northumberland. He was a soldier. He was a politician. Mm-hmm. But he came from no nobility. He was one of those kind of like a Thomas Cromwell. He
like worked his way up.
Worked his way up on his own. Mm-hmm. He really did not like Edward Seymour, the older brother of Thomas Seymour.
Right.
He believed in 1549, England was going bankrupt over how he was advising Edward VI, because again, Edward's like 9 years old.
He's a child.
Telling him how to rule England.
Right.
He was the one who rallied up the Privy Council to agree to overthrow Edward Seymour and have him executed in 1552. Lots of beheadings going on here, just left and right.
Yes.
So both Seymour brothers were executed and beheaded. Mm-hmm. But John Dudley, first Duke of Northumberland, he's the one who takes over. And he's kind of calling the shots here.
He really
is. He gets inside of Edward's ear on, okay, we need to revise your succession. Mm-hmm. And I got my eyes on these girls.
Yeah. And so when they initially approach Jane and they say, hey, we found you a husband, she protests right away. You know, she knows she's too young. She's smart, so she understands what's going on here. And I think it got to the point where her father even kind of struck her across the face a few times. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have a choice. Like, this is the plan. The king has decided this. The duke has decided this. Like, we're all on board. You have to get on board. So eventually, because she's obviously, like, pious and Protestant and believes in honoring her mother and father and her country, she's like, okay, like, I guess I don't really have a choice. I do have to go through with this.
May 25th, 1553, she marries Guildford Dudley at the Dereham House.
Which is a posh, fancy little house.
It is.
Hopefully you get to see. Is it still there?
I don't know. Should I? Should I go look for it?
Yeah.
It was a triple wedding. Triple. Talk about how Elizabeth was like, boom, 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 get him married.
Yes.
So it was Jane, her younger sister, Catherine, and then Guildford's sister, also Catherine.
Right. Like we said, lots of Catherines.
So they all get married together. And at this point, Edward VI is still alive, but he's not doing so well. Mm-mm. They believe it was tuberculosis that took him out.
Yeah.
He was only 15. He knows he's not feeling too hot, and mm-hmm. he sees the end for the first time as possibly being, like, his sickness could be terminal.
Yeah.
And that's when he's starting to reconsider, like, oh, shoot, there's no lineup.
Yeah.
The lineup we have is, it sucks.
Even Let's figure this out. Yeah, even with these new marriages and things, he realizes that he's probably going to not be around long enough to see all of this through. And we have to remember a few things about this. So we have to remember that in 1544, something was passed called the Third Succession Act. So essentially, before this, Mary the First and Elizabeth the First, who are King Henry's daughters, were both deemed illegitimate. Mm-hmm. They said, well, you know, your mother, Mary, was Catherine of Aragon, and your mother, Elizabeth, was Anne Boleyn, who have both been divorced from the king. You two are no longer, you know, up for the throne. You two are basically illegitimate daughters with not that many rights. You know, you can live at court, sure, but you really can't go and do anything else. So this Third Succession Act brought them back, essentially, like made them legitimate heirs, made them legitimate daughters. Mm-hmm. And so this happens, and Edward then creates something called My Devise for Succession, which is such a teenage boy.
My journal.
My journal.
My ideas.
Yeah.
Written by Edward.
So in his own hand, he creates this whole thing to say, okay, like, yes, there's this Third Succession Act, but, you know, what can I do to have my influence over history? Like, what can I write in? So he's just going on and saying, okay, we need Mary's male heirs. We need Elizabeth's male heirs. If Francis over there on the other part of the family tree has male heirs, great, they get the title. So he's just going through saying this male heir, that male heir. But as he, again, he knows that his health is in serious decline, he changes part of this by just two words that changed the entire fate of everything. Because again, we're still kind of assuming that Mary and Elizabeth are the two that are up for the job. But he goes in, he knows he doesn't want Mary because she's Catholic. He doesn't really say why he passed over Elizabeth the First.
I feel like because if he passes over Mary,
he has to pass over Elizabeth.
Just, which Elizabeth was a strong candidate, which she turns out to be, being a Protestant herself.
Of course, golden era. Sure. But he immediately looks at Jane Grey and says, well, Northumberland is already in my ear. I know she just married this Guildford guy, so, you know, they're probably going to produce soon. So he adds a tiny little carrot, like a little insert into his devise for succession. It changes from Lady Jane's heir males to Lady Jane and her heir males.
And her.
And her is all he added. Two words. And
her. But
that's
so important. Yeah. Lady Jane and her heir males,
yeah,
saying Lady Jane is included,
right,
to become queen.
She's a candidate now.
And then after her, her heir males. Exactly. Her male heir. Wow.
It's hard to say. After her heirs male.
Heirs. I can't keep saying it. Sounds weird.
One of those things, the more you say
but the way I love this document when you actually look at it, because mm-hmm. It's true. It's all in his own handwriting. He's a 15-year-old boy writing this out. He actually has very pretty handwriting.
He does. They like call it crappy for the time because back then like penmanship was it.
Yeah, and but he's kind of sick.
It looks nice. It's probably, I think,
throwing up all over or whatever.
Better than Robbie's.
But it was kind of like written immaturely. It was pretty plain. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he just adds a little carrot, like a little up sign, like, and her. You just, that's enough. That's all it took.
Exactly.
It's crazy. Yeah. That those two words changed the course of history.
Exactly. And a lot of people think that this wasn't just, again, thought up by him, that it was probably coerced by Northumberland. Obviously, he wants power himself. He's thinking, wow, like his son could become king.
Because Jane Grey's going to be his daughter-in-law.
Yeah, yeah. So they circulate this letter, this My Devise for Succession letter written.
My journal.
My journal by Edward VI. So they patent it in June 1553, and it is signed by, like, I think it's, what, 102 notables, including all of the Privy Council. So now it becomes, you know, this 15-year-old boy's journal slash, like, my will. And then it becomes this very important document where everyone signs off on it and they say, yes, mm-hmm. we approve, even your little carrot and her.
102 people in the Privy Council and 10 lawyers all signed off on it. Yeah. So, yeah, it was legit. Like, a lot of people agreed and they signed and they said, yep, this counts.
Looks good.
July 6, 1553, Edward starts about 8 p.m. He goes, I feel faint. Oof. Minutes later, the kid is dead.
Not very resilient fellow.
I feel bad for Edward.
A little. He wasn't that, you know.
He had some potential.
I guess.
I also love, like, the fate of things where it's like, if just one thing would have been different.
Yeah.
And you think about the butterfly effect, you know?
Totally.
And how it just so happened there was, like, what a, like, powerful moment for women in history. Even though they had to fight damn hard for it, mm-hmm. like, their one and only living boy dies.
Right.
And it just turns into now a stream of women
yeah,
to
now
take
it's
over.
It's fight for badass. The throne with all of these important women that we've talked about for a lot of different episodes who really mm-hmm. redefined, you know, the era and redefined history.
Yeah. When I think of the Tudors, I think of women. I don't no, really – I yeah. mean, sure, Henry.
Right. Aside from Henry
and his women.
But you really. only think of women. Like, yeah. yeah, you think of his wives. You think of his daughters. You think of, obviously, Elizabeth's reign. Mm-hmm. You know? So it is kind of funny that this is one of the most exciting times in English history. And yeah. It's run by ladies.
So the weak boy dies. He dies. No one announces his death, and this is extremely intentional.
Right.
Northumberland is on it super, super fast. Yep. He's like, okay, it is game time. The kid just died. Boom, boom, boom. I've got to get my ducks in a row. I've got to get my son somehow onto the throne, even though his son, Guildford, has zero connection to royalty or the throne or whatsoever.
Right. Again, they're barely noble.
They rush over, and he starts instantly getting the Tower of London ready. Mm-hmm. And he's doing this because he knows the minute that Mary the First, or let's just call her Mary Tudor, because yeah. she's not Mary the First yet. She's not the queen.
Sure, yeah.
That he knows that Mary Tudor is going to try to slide in there. Mm-hmm. The minute that she knows that her younger brother died, in her mind, she is next yes. in the throne.
Yes.
So he tries to be very sneaky with all of this. And his first plan of action is, let's get the Tower of London ready. Mm-hmm. The Tower of London is the fortress in this period and in this area.
Oh, yeah.
And if there's going to be any type of outbreak of civil war or protection needed whatsoever, it means the tower needs to be guarded. It needs to have ammunition and military, right. and they got to buckle down.
Yeah. He wanted to claim the tower before anyone else could.
Yep. That's mm-hmm. the first piece. And also, the Tower of London is an important piece of the coronation, because that's also where the next heir yeah. will be going there to be, to get their procession ready and prepare for coronation and all of that good stuff.
Yep.
So he's trying to keep it very hush-hush that Edward has died. Mm-hmm. And the only way that people kind of start figuring it out is all the movement happening at the tower. He's building up on guards. He's building up on military, on, right. like I said, the gunpowder, the ammunition, the cannons, whatever they had, the yeah. swords. And people are, especially people like within the court, I mean, really only people who saw Edward die know that he's yeah. dead.
Well, and he's sickly, so he's always in bed.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, where's he? He's missing from the party. Like, no, he's always missing. Like, you never see him anyway. So it's very easy to conceal his death.
People kind of start figuring it out, though. Like, there's a lot of commotion going on. Mm-hmm. And Dudley seems a little bit on edge right now, right. Northumberland. They then call Jane to the House of Sion.
Yes.
And she doesn't know why, but they're just like, you are needed here right now, little lady. Get your butt over here.
Yep. So the date is July 9th, 1553. And so she goes all the way to the House of Sion, and they all just kind of sit her down, they all being Northumberland, I believe the Privy Council's there.
Mm-hmm. Her parents.
Her parents. Like, everyone of importance in her life is sitting there. And they say, hey, you are going to be the new queen. Congratulations. Your queen.
She has no idea.
She did not see this coming. She is a smart girl, so I'm sure she had some inkling of, like, where she stood in line with the throne. But her first thing that she said was, this is not for me. She basically alluded to the fact that this is Mary's role. Like, I'm not supposed to be queen. So she was very reluctant. She didn't even know at this point that King Edward VI had died. So she starts crying on behalf of him. Like, she didn't even know that he was, dead. So she starts crying. There's a lot of emotions going through. And she wasn't overly emotional. She was just shocked, I think.
I think people didn't know where her tears were coming from. Was it tears of joy? Because, oh, cool, I'm going to be queen.
Right.
But really, they think it was because she knew Edward. They were kind of childhood friends. It's her cousin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she, once she kind of, gets over her reluctance, she then says, okay, well, if this is what everyone desires, if this is what Edward VI wrote, you know, into his like kind of will, essentially, then I suppose it's the will of God that I take this role. So yes, I will accept. Again, she wasn't super all about it right away, but she went ahead and said she would do this and she would be the new queen and the first queen of England. They've never had a queen in her own right before.
That's kind of wild.
Yeah.
She's 16 years old.
Yes. She's a baby.
How, Elizabeth, okay, imagine you're 16.
Yeah.
You just get called over to, ooh, like, this big house, and they're like, Elizabeth, you're going to be queen. What would your reaction be?
I mean, I would already have had a plan in place, and I'd be like, that's right. First thing we're going to do is we're going to remodel the West Wing. I want a big party on a fortnight from now. It's going to be a black and white themed party. Or, like, my portrait hanging in the gallery when you first walk in. No, I don't know what you would do at 16. I think, again, it's a lot of emotions, right? Like, obviously, anyone's excited to be told you have a new title. But with that comes a lot of just pressure immediately, too. Because you're like, oh my gosh, like, I have to run this country. What does that mean? What's my day-to-day going to look like? Is there a price on my head now because I now have enemies? Like, do I have to fight wars? Like, it's a lot of stuff going on. So I don't think anyone's quite prepared to hear it, even if you are someone who thought that could be you and you were in line the whole time for it.
I couldn't imagine that it resonated with her right away either.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like probably the first thing she was hearing was Edward died.
Yeah.
So you're overcome by emotion with that. Like, for me, I feel like I would be like, I'm sorry, what?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like it wouldn't feel real. Until I wouldn't believe it until I saw it.
Yeah, exactly.
Until I was sitting in the
throne room.
Yeah, in the throne room with a crown on my head, I wouldn't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely shocking. So she, again, is now the first queen of England. And it's not until the next day, July 10th, that they say, okay, you're officially proclaimed queen, and we want you to reside in the Tower of London today. So she has, again, no time to even process this. One day she's told, you're going to be queen. The next day she's officially proclaimed queen. They send her to the Tower of London. And like Megan kind of alluded to, the Tower of London is exactly where the Tudor monarchs all resided from ascension to coronation. Mm-hmm. So right before they're coronated, everyone stays here. So we, again, at this point, identify the Tower of London a lot of different ways. We know prisoners stay there. We know executions happen there. But it's also torture, where everyone's coronated.
Prisoners.
Yeah.
there's actually beautiful apartments there as well. Mm-hmm. And if we remember back to Anne Boleyn, it was very ironic because she also stayed in the tower in the apartments on her coronation as tradition.
Yes.
She stayed in the same exact rooms when she was held on house arrest.
Right.
And then eventually executed. So it's kind of like foreboding too. I'd be like, there's a lot of history here.
Yeah. If it were me, like, in charge, I'd be like, again, going back to if I were queen, I'd be like, okay, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to make a separate place for where I stay before coronation because I'm not staying here.
Far away.
I know how this game works.
Yeah.
One day you just lock the doors and I never come out.
Her procession to the tower was a very big deal.
Mm-hmm.
She was dressed gorgeously, as if I saw it.
So beautiful.
The top of Vogue. She wore green velvet with gold and a white headdress full of jewels and gold.
You sound like you're at the Met Gala.
Mm-hmm. Dudley wore all white and gold.
Beautiful.
Her mother, Frances, was carrying her train, which is a very symbolic and kind of odd thing because, as mm-hmm. Elizabeth mentioned, Jane is the first person to be crowned just as queen in her own right without just being married into it. But it was also a very odd thing that the succession skipped her mother, Frances.
Yeah.
You would think it would go in order, like mother, then daughter.
That's very odd.
And that was kind of the first draft because Ed did several drafts of his device for the succession.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, it didn't single out Jane at all, but it basically said, like, Frances's heirs and then
like that
the kid's heirs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then it eventually led into just, like, Jane and her male heirs.
Right.
So it was kind of funny that Frances was overlooked, but yet she was still there and she's behind her daughter, which is symbolically kind of a big deal.
It is, because this is an era, too, where everything is all about rank and tradition, right? So
the order of things.
Yeah, so, like, the wise are, you know, outranking the young. The mother outranks the daughter. Like, the men outrank the women. That's just, like, the structure of society. So you have this young 16-year-old girl whose mother is holding up her train.
Following her. In her footsteps. Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of backwards. Even more backwards is this little shithead Guildford. This kid, I keep mentioning him because he has
fucking guy.
He has zero connection to any of the royalty. His dad just slithered him in there.
Right. Talk about a little leech. They're just like, and here.
Guildford has the audacity to be in the very front of everything in the procession. Oh, so he's in front of Jane, the now proclaimed queen. He's in front of his father. He's standing in front of everybody.
Right.
And he's leading this procession into things, which again is just a symbolic thing where his father, Northumberland, clearly put him there very deliberately to make a statement and to show, like, okay,
this is your future king.
Yeah, this is who you really need to look at, and this is going to be our leader leading us into this procession. This guy that nobody knows who he is. He's only 18 years old. sure, very, very believable. But anyways, we've got this big procession going through. Jane makes it to the tower, and this is very kind of a terrible thought and a little bit foreboding, but it is the last time she actually leaves the Tower of London.
Yeah.
Ever.
Ever. Like we said, sometimes they just lock the doors on you and you don't come out.
She didn't know it. She thought she was going in for a good thing.
Right.
Little did she know that she was leaving behind her entire life, her home, her childhood, her friends, her innocence, her just being a nobody off in the countryside of England.
Right.
As soon as they shut the tower doors behind her, all of that changed.
Yeah, she will never again exit. But Jane, again, this is all a lot of stuff compacted into only a few days. So I know this timeline seems condensed, but that's how it happened because, again, 9-day queen. But she's a smart girl. You know, she knows what's going on in terms of Northumberland trying to get his little shithead son on the throne. So she...
I'll just call him Little Shithead.
Little Shithead, forward. Yeah. You don't need to know his name. But she just kind of out of the blue, without really consulting anyone, says, hey, Dudley's not going to be king. Like, Guildford is not going to be
Did you hear how she told them this?
How?
Do you have the story? Oh, no. I have the story.
Okay.
So she was the treasurer of the jewels. Brought her yes. crown.
Okay, I do remember
just
this.
For like a fitting. And she was by herself, just him and her, and she was alone, and he puts the crown on her head. Just like, how does this feel? This will be your new crown. Just, you know, it's fitted. Okay, all right. Mm-hmm. He goes, and you know, we're going to make a similar one for Guildford. And she goes, oh no, he's not going to be king. Yeah. I think I'm just going to make him a duke.
Yeah. so she tells him,
hello.
You're just going to be Duke of Clarence now. It's cute you thought you were going to be king and outrank me, but I'm the queen.
Making him king would have required an act of parliament, which she just wasn't quite ready to do.
No.
This is the very first decision that Jane's making on her own.
As a queen.
And I feel like she's building some confidence, like, yeah, I'm queen now, right. And husband of mine, you're not going to be king.
Yep.
And of course, this overthrows Northumberland's entire plan of getting his son on the throne. So they're not very happy. Her mother-in-law is demanding, no, my son needs to be king.
Right.
Jane never liked her mother-in-law. She always thought there was this weird dynamic of, like, you know, mommy's little boy.
Yeah.
Like, he's such a mama's boy that she got very annoyed by how protective she was. I like this, too. Guildford told her, well, I won't have sex with you until you make me king. And which is a big deal because, like, you need the heirs. She needs to get pregnant.
Yeah.
But that was his whole threat was no king, no sex. No crown, no sex.
No crown, no sex. She's like, cool.
That's fine with me, Guildford. Go be the Duke of Clarence somewhere.
Right.
All of this is happening. All of this drama. Again, it's just in a few days.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, now word is out on what's happening.
Yes.
Mary the First is still around. Mary Tudor, we're calling her.
She is. She's still around.
And she's got word of what's going on.
She finds out Edward VI is dead. And if you know anything about Mary, Mary is ready to be queen. She's ready to be a Catholic queen. She's ready to be a fierce Catholic queen and change the whole country back into Catholic England. So she hears, hey, Edward VI is dead. She's like, awesome. I'm going to go start rallying support. I'm the next queen.
And it's on.
And it's on. This is a good part to leave you all hanging.
We're going to let you simmer on that for just a couple weeks. Yeah. I'm going to go head off to England.
Yeah.
Bye. No, but in all seriousness, we're going to end on that cliffhanger. We're going to do a little recap next time we reconvene here.
Yep.
So we're going to sit on this a little bit. Jane's still on a high. She's got that crown on her head. Guildford does not have a crown on his head, and neither does Mary.
Something's bound to happen here.
Elizabeth, any final words?
Not until next time.